Court will proceed now to the sixth case. It's me versus Mandel, Mr. Paul.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Mosby. My name is Joel Paul, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Aaron Smay, who is with me today along with his wife in the galley. This is a case of retaliatory discharge, Your Honors, under the Indiana Supreme Court case of Frampton, which prohibits retaliation against an employee for enforcing workers' compensation benefits. As this court, as well as other district courts in this circuit, as well as the Indiana Supreme Court, as well as Indiana appellate courts has ruled, there are two factors that go into play with regard to proving a prima facie case of retaliatory discharge under Frampton. One of those being temporal proximity. And as this court has said in the case of Hudson v. Walmart, which, as you'll see in the record, has been cited by the district court repeatedly in its lower opinion in this case, basically stated that two particular factors go into play, one being the temporal proximity of the termination or the pretext with regard to the reasons for that termination. Now, those being two dependent factors that this court established in Hudson v. Walmart. Taking those separately, let's focus first on the issue of temporal proximity. The facts are absolutely clear that Mr. Smay suffered an on-the-job injury when his fingertip was severed on the hot end line on September the 20th of 2008. Mr. Smay was immediately taken by ambulance to the emergency room, I believe, at the local hospital there, and underwent surgery approximately 2 days later on that Monday. Now, you'll also see that there are no material facts of dispute with regard to what happened that night after Mr. Smay had his finger severed on the hot end line. He was approached immediately by his immediate supervisor, Mr. Bill Siemens. With regard to any issue, as you're aware with the record before you, that the appellee's policy does have a pretty detailed substance abuse policy, and part of that being that any employee that suffers an on-the-job injury is subject to an immediate drug test, which Mr. Smay obviously underwent when he went to the hospital. Prior to being transported to the hospital, his immediate supervisor, Mr. Siemens, actually initiated a conversation about that drug test with Mr. Smay, saying, "Well, Aaron, you know you're going to have to undergo a drug test." And basically Mr. Smay said, "Well, I should be clean." I mean, the statement that Mr. Smay will concede that he said was that basically he was at a location maybe a week prior where someone had been smoking marijuana, so if there were to be any type of negative drug test, it may be for that reason. When Mr. Siemens immediately was approached by the acting plant manager that day, Mr. Matthew Weber, who ultimately, Your Honors, was the decision maker in this case, he basically asked Mr. Siemens, with regard to what happened. Mr. Siemens told Mr. Weber about the severed fingertip, and that made some statement forwarded to Mr. Weber that Mr. Siemens said, quote unquote, that Mr. Smay, the appellant, had said that I'm dirty. Now, Mr. Weber testified under oath that he didn't need to ask Mr. Siemens what that meant, because to Mr. Weber, that was self-explanatory. His response to Mr. Siemens was, "Well, we'll go to the hospital and see what happens." So Mr. Weber didn't, place any emphasis on that statement, that quote-unquote statement that Mr. Siemens alleges that Mr. Smay said. Now, subsequent to that, Mr. Weber did eventually go to the hospital where Mr. Smay was being treated, and this is where it gets completely fuzzy, Your Honors, where a genuine issue of material fact is absolutely present here that needs to be reconciled by a finder of fact or a jury in this case. Mr. Weber claims that there was a discussion between Mr. Smay and his wife in which Mr. Smay allegedly said he smoked a big one over Labor Day weekend, which, if you take judicial notice, was approximately 3 weeks prior to this incident. Now, my clients absolutely deny any type of conversation to this extent taking place. That, in and of itself, creates an issue of material fact. Now, one issue of material fact that is not absolutely not in dispute, Your Honors, is that Mr. Smay tested negative for drugs that night. It's conceded by the appellee. There was no evidence of any drugs in Mr. Smay's body.
Why did he agree to that second stipulation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The second stipulation, which was far less onerous than the first one.
Well, I believe, Your Honor,
it seemed to be all that unreasonable.
The reason it was unreasonable, I'm sorry, Judge Evans, is because they weren't offering him any back pay. He had been out of work from approximately September 20th to February when they made the second stipulation. And the appellees weren't willing to offer him any kind of back pay. He had been without back pay, any pay, for that time in between when he was originally terminated to when they proposed the second stipulation. That was one of the reasons why he was unwilling to accept that second stipulation, because he was basically, they weren't willing to award him back pay. So in a sense, it was almost like an alternative that they were proposing to him, you know, either take your job back without any back pay, but we're still going to expose you to the stipulation. And the other thing, Your Honor, was that basically he would have technically been admitting to having done drugs if he was willing to even sign that second stipulation. So with regard to the temporal proximity, I mean, basically, as this court has said on numerous occasions, days, even in fact, there has been cases cited by this court where 6 months has been enough for the court to find that there is an issue of material fact with regard to temporal proximity in this case. Now, Mr. Weber does not deny that he, in fact, on that following Monday, following Mr. Smay's surgery, went to Tower Surgical Center. In fact, went to the surgery center to confront Mr. Smay only 2 days after the injury and basically told him that he must report back to work that day. After sustaining a severed fingertip undergoing surgery, Mr. Weber, the decision maker in this case, told my client that he needed to report back to work that afternoon. Mr. Smay was obviously under the influence of painkillers, narcotics, you know, after having undergone surgery. So that temporal proximity in and of itself, Your Honors, I would submit is enough to get this case to a jury on the issue of retaliatory discharge. Now, the district court said in its opinion that Mr. Smay's temporal proximity evidence is a wash because of all the subsequent events that took place after this negative drug test. However, I would submit that this court has said that temporal proximity in certain circumstances can be enough to take this case to the jury, and on that basis, we would ask that you remand this case for a jury trial completely on that issue of temporal proximity. In the event that temporal proximity, in the alternative that Your Honors find that temporal proximity wasn't enough in this case, even it being 2 days after the injury, pretext is another issue that this court has said in Hudson v. Walmart is also a factor that the court can consider with regard to retaliatory intent. If you look specifically at the reasons asserted by Mr. Weber in this case as to why Mr. Smay was given that initial stipulation of dismissal, you'll see that basically the stipulations in and of itself that were contained in that initial stipulation were contrary to the appellee's own internal policies and procedures. And this court has said on repeated occasions that evidence that an employer violates or goes contrary to its own policies and procedures is clear evidence of pretext. In particular, the record is clear that Mr. Weber, in conjunction with Gail Threet from Appellee's Human Resources Department, drafted that stipulation of dismissal and required Mr. Smay to pay by himself for the cost of any random drug screening. And that is absolutely contrary to the collective bargaining agreement with the union that was in place by the appellees, as well as the appellee's own policies with regard to substance abuse. And I would submit in and of that self, that establishes pretext for the non-retaliatory reason that Mr. Weber provided in this case. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. With all due respect, I'll reserve time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. Mr. Mosby?
May it please the Court, my name is Brian Mosby, and I represent Johns Manville. Johns Manville respectfully requests that this Court affirm the District Court's entry of summary judgment for two reasons. First, Mr. Smay is unable to connect his entitlement to workers' compensation benefits to the company's decision to terminate his employment. And second, Mr. Smay has absolutely no evidence that the company exerted unauthorized control over his personal property following the termination of his employment. In fact, as we argued in our brief, we believe Mr. Smay's conversion appeal merits sanctions and that he has presented exactly the same argument to this court as he did at the lower court and has offered absolutely no evidence to support that argument. With respect to Mr. Smay's claim that the temporal proximity in this case is sufficient by itself to get to a jury or for remain to a jury, the bottom line is that Mr. Smay was terminated because he refused the stipulation. And in arguing that his temporal proximity is enough, he ignores the intervening conduct, his own intervening conduct, which, beginning with his statement that, which raised the possibility that he may not pass the mandatory drug test, led to the termination of his employment. Specifically, Mr. Smay made the statement, which was, as Mr. Paul stated, conveyed to Mr. Weber. Mr. Weber then conveyed his understanding of what Mr. Smay had said to Ms. Threet. And there is absolutely no dispute that Ms. Threet made the determination that Mr. Schmay's statement constituted an involuntary admission of illegal drug use in violation of the applicable policy, which is the 2007 substance abuse policy, and the only policy Ms. Threet considered. Based on her determination that Mr. Schmay's statement was involuntary, the company drafted the stipulation, offered the stipulation to Mr. Schmay, and Mr. Schmay refused it. Only after Mr. Schmay's refusal did the company terminate his employment. So Mr. Schmay's argument that temporal proximity is sufficient ignores his own conduct, and in fact ignores that his conduct is an intervening act, as this court has found in Caskey versus Colgate-Palmolive, and as well as in Hudson versus Walmart stores, where the conduct, the employee's conduct, independent of the entitlement to workers' compensation benefits, was the reason for the termination or led to or began the chain of events that led to the termination. And as this court has also said, temporal proximity evidence must be considered in the context. Stripped of its context, 4 days may get you there, but in context of Mr. Smay's own conduct, we do not believe Mr. Smay's temporal proximity evidence is enough to allow an inference of causation. Moving to Mr. Smay's argument concerning pretext, again, the stated reason for Mr. Smay's termination is his refusal to sign the stipulation. There's no dispute that the company offered him the stipulation. There's no dispute that he refused the stipulation. There's also no dispute the company stated that as its reason for termination, and Mr. Smay, in his own testimony, admits that his refusal of the stipulation is the accurate reason for his termination. Mr. Smay focuses on the idea that the company had multiple policies in effect and didn't follow its own policy. There is only one policy that's in evidence. It's the 2007 substance abuse policy. Under that policy, the employer, Johns Manville, was required to provide Mr. Smay employee assistance if he made a voluntary admission. There's no dispute that the company determined his admission to be involuntary. Further, there's no dispute the company offered him employee assistance, as the very first paragraph of the stipulation requires Mr. Schmay to successfully complete and successfully meet with an employee assistance program counselor in order to comply with the stipulation. In sum, with respect to the retaliatory discharge argument, there is no genuine issue of material fact. Mr. Schmay's own post-injury conduct is an intervening act that interrupts any chain of causation between his entitlement to benefits and his termination. Further, there is no evidence to call into question that the company's stated reason for terminating his employment, which is his refusal to sign the stipulation. Moving now to Mr. Schmay's conversion argument, he raises 3 points. He states that Johns Manville possessed his property following his termination, that he made repeated requests for the return of that property, and that the company refused those requests. Again, Mr. Smay's argument ignores the evidence in the record, specifically his own testimony. Mr. Smay testified that Bernice Wilson, an hourly employee and a representative of the union, is the only person to possess his property following his termination. Also, that she's the only person with the company that Mr. Smay spoke to about the return of his property. In fact, Mr. Smay admits he never raised the issue of his property with the company. He didn't do so at the time of termination because he believed he'd be getting his job back after the arbitration process, and he admits he never raised it at any other point with the company. To prove conversion, Mr. Schmay must prove that the company acted with the requisite criminal intent, either knowingly or intentionally. So Mr. Schmay has provided no evidence that the company, first of all, even possessed his property, let alone did so with a high probability that its possession was unauthorized, he can't prove the requisite criminal intent. Therefore, we ask that this court affirm the district court's entry of summary judgment on Mr. Schmay's conversion claim. With respect to our argument that Mr. Schmay's appeal warrants sanctions, again, we state that he's raised the exact same argument. He's offered no evidence, and that's similar to conduct that this court found sanctionable in Owens versus Briggs and Stratton Corporation, which was actually a case where a pro se appellee did the same thing, and arguably Mr. Smay's conduct is worse in that he's represented by counsel and in doing and raising the exact same argument has, we believe, presented this court with an appeal that merits sanctions. In sum, Mr. Schnee must demonstrate that a genuine issue of material fact exists. The undisputed evidence, including his testimony, establishes that his conduct is an intervening act between his entitlement to workers' compensation benefits and his termination, which would interrupt any chain of causation, therefore making his temporal proximity evidence insufficient. And second, there is no evidence that the company intentionally or knowingly exerted unauthorized control over Mr. Schnee's property. For these reasons, we ask that this court affirm the district court's entry of summary judgment on the entirety of Mr. Schnee's claims. Unless there are any questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Allow me to just touch on the whole issue of sanctions very briefly before I get back to the merits of this case. As this court is well aware, this is a de novo review. This court will basically sit in the shoes of the district court with regard to the conversion claim. We are within our rights to basically make the same arguments that we did at the district court. We're simply not allowed to make new arguments. And that is the basis for why we move forward with the same arguments at the district court level as we did here on the conversion claim. And Your Honors will sit in the shoes and determine whether you would have made that same decision with the same facts and the same evidence. Therefore, Mr. Mosby's claim that it's sanctionable that we made these same arguments is without merit. And we would respectfully submit that the case that in fact the appellees cite to in support of their argument for sanctions dealt with a pro se plaintiff who basically had missed the 90-day determination from ASU to write a notice of right to sue by the EEOC to file a formal claim. She had missed that 90 days, had filed the case was dismissed, then she appealed it to this court and basically made the exact same argument with regard to that 90 days. We would absolutely submit that those facts are clearly distinguishable from what's happened here with regard to the conversion claim.
But your conversion claim doesn't mention a thing about vicarious liability, didn't at the district court. The district judge pointed that out.
Right, and Your Honor.
You make no argument whatsoever in your brief about that.
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact, that's the reason why we made the same arguments was because we feel that the district court went into the issue of respondeat superior when it wasn't even brought up initially in the summary judgment motion. So that's why we fulfilled the same arguments. What are the elements for conversion?
It's verbatim the same.
Right, absolutely.
It makes no explanation of why you think the district judge was wrong.
Right. And again, because we believe it's a de novo review, we believe the arguments should be the same in the appellate brief as they should have been at the district court level because it is a de novo review.
Equally deficient.
Okay. I see my time is up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paul. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.